This is the first time a sitting U.S. president has entered North Korea.
Trump and Kim meet at the DMZ. It's Monday, July 1st. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Also stop by our Facebook page at VOA Asia. Coming up, we delve into the surprise meeting in Korea, diminishing demand for rhino horns. China gets avocados from Kenya. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Donald Trump has become the first sitting U.S. president to visit North Korea, stepping across the border during a meeting at the demilitarized zone with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. After shaking hands with Kim at the Panmunjom border village, Trump walked across the military demarcation line separating the two Koreas. Kim and Trump then crossed back over the border into South Korea. Trump on Saturday had said the meeting would only last 2 minutes. However, Trump's private talks with Kim lasted about 50 minutes, turning it into an impromptu summit, as we hear more from VOA's Bill Gallo in Seoul.
This is the first time a sitting U.S. president has entered North Korea. Donald Trump, after shaking hands with Kim Jong-un, stepped over the concrete barrier which forms the military demarcation line that separates North and South Korea. That is a historic moment. There's no two ways about it. Previous U.S. presidents have visited North Korea after they left office. Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton very famously visited North Korea. But this is the first time a sitting U.S. president has done so. It will always live in history this day because of that reason, I guess.
And I understand that there's a lot coming from the South Korean president. He's really, you know, applauding this effort.
Sure. Well, this is his main policy priority, is engagement with North Korea. And I can say in a less analytical mode even, this is a big priority for many Koreans here in South Korea where I'm at. They are undeterred by things like arguments here in the U.S., such as this will give Kim Jong-un legitimacy, that you're normalizing relations with a brutal dictator. I mean, there are people who are concerned about that, but a good many people in South Korea support outreach to North Korea, even as unsavory as it might be. This is a situation where you have two countries that are divided. Many people here do not want them to remain divided. However, you know, how things move forward from here, given the vast disagreements between those involved in these talks, is unclear.
VOA Seoul correspondent Bill Gallo speaking with Tommy McNeil. Stay with VOA Asia as we further explore this third meeting between Kim and Trump in just a moment. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you go and visit voanews.com. Trump meets Kim at DMZ, crosses into North Korea. Hong Kong braces for more protests on handover anniversary. Ship carrying waste returns to Canada from Philippines. You'll find expanded coverage on these stories and much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and our voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Now that Donald Trump has become the first U.S. president to enter North Korea while in office, the question of what is next must be asked. That's what VOA Asia's Ira Melman asked of Evans Revere, former U.S. State Department official dealing with East Asian and Pacific affairs. Melman began his conversation by asking whether President Trump's style of diplomacy through personal relationship could actually work.
It remains to be seen how this is going to turn out. I am a skeptic. Many years of dealing with the North Koreans and a pretty good sense of what their bottom line has been and continues to be makes me deeply skeptical that this process is going to end up with a success.
Why wouldn't a new approach work? Why couldn't a new approach work as one man who understands another man?
I am all in favor of new and different and alternate approaches, and during the course of many years working on these issues, tried just about, or recommended just about every approach that is imaginable, including this one. The problem that we have here is that regardless of the approach, the North Korean bottom line has not changed. And we saw that based on what we observed in Singapore and, more importantly, what we observed in Hanoi. The North Korean leader, the North Korean system, they are determined to hold on to the core components of their nuclear weapons program at virtually any cost.
The word denuclearization was, I don't believe, brought up by Donald Trump or Kim Jong-un in the remarks they made after their meeting. What is wrong with not doing it the other way, by releasing or reducing some of the actions that have been taken against them economically? And why not let them be a nuclear power?
Well, first of all, one of the key sources of leverage for the United States in these negotiations are economic sanctions and the pressure that is on North Korea. In the past, in previous administrations, the United States tried the easing of sanctions, and that did not lead to denuclearization. It led to quite the opposite. So we learned some very hard lessons back in the day, both in the Clinton administration and the Bush administration. We learned some very tough lessons from the North Koreans about their determination to hold on to their nuclear capacity, regardless of the U.S. approach. We held out the prospect of a presidential visit in the Clinton administration, and President Clinton personally rejected that because he was not convinced, with good reason, that the North Koreans were prepared to conclude a deal with him. President Trump has obviously reached a different conclusion, hence his three summits and his stepping across the border into North Korea. But with respect to your other point, why not let them be and let them continue on the path that they're on? Keep in mind that the North Koreans have actually threatened to use nuclear weapons against the United States. They are developing the capabilities to carry out that threat. This is a country that has shown certain capacities and capabilities that are pretty barbaric over the years. And beyond that, North Korea is not accepted by the international community as a nuclear weapon state, unlike the United States and China, et cetera. And to allow North Korea to have violated its international obligations by developing a nuclear weapons program, it would further do damage to the international nonproliferation regime.
VOA Asia's Ira Melman with former U.S. State Department official and Asia-Pacific expert Evans Revere. Zimbabwe says its practice of dehorning rhinos to deter poaching is paying off. Rhino horns are popular for traditional medicines across Asia. Wildlife officials say poaching is slowing, and the number of rhinos is increasing thanks to the program. Columbus Mavunga reports from Matobo National Park, about an hour's drive from the Bulawayo, Zimbabwe's second biggest city.
Zimbabwe's Matobo National Park is home to both endangered black rhinos and threatened southern white rhinos. They were moved to this site about 500 kilometers southwest of Harare to protect them from rampant poaching. Wildlife conservation groups say joint efforts by non-profit groups and the government of Zimbabwe to fight rhino poaching are working. They remove the rhino's horns, which are highly valued in the Asian black market for alleged healing properties and begged by science.
The dehorning, of course, removes the incentive to poachers and increases the risk for a low reward. And in small populations, we feel that it is the way to go.
Still, efforts to stop poaching is a major challenge.
Protection of rhinos is a very complicated affair, as you're probably aware, and there are a number of strategies which are in place. We had the big poaching epidemic in 2003-2004, and at that point we stepped up our assistance to parks insofar as assisting with implants in horns and other patrol support to try and cut down on the loss of rhinos in the national park.
The current rhino population is kept secret so that poaching groups do not exploit it and wildlife conservationists can continue to make progress. Ultimately, officials say the goal is to ensure future generations see rhinos in national parks, not in zoos. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Matobo National Park, Zimbabwe.
Coming up, China looks to East Africa for avocados. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news from VOA Asia, a ship carrying 69 containers of waste mislabeled as plastic recyclables returned to Canada Saturday from the Philippines, closing a chapter on a dispute that started in 2013 and sparked a diplomatic furor between Ottawa and Manila. Open your daily news chapter with a visit to VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, for decades, Kenya has exported avocados mainly to Europe and America. In April, Kenya signed a trade agreement with China that will see Kenyan avocados exported to the Asian country. Kenyan avocado farmers plan to increase production in hopes of tapping the huge Chinese market, although as Rail Ambur reports, there is a requirement that they'll have to meet.
Alexander Mushiri tends to the 30 avocado trees he planted 7 years ago on his farm in Kiharu, Murang'a County. In previous years, most of his avocados were sold locally. Then in April, Kenya signed a deal to export avocados to China, making Kenya the only African nation to sell the fruit to the huge Chinese consumer market. With that in mind, Mushiri says he will scale up production by planting more trees.
If we plant more avocados, that means there will be a market for them. Back then, brokers would come, pick the larger fruits and leave the smaller ones on the farms with no one to sell to, hence lots of wastage.
About 2 kilometers away from Mushiri's farm, Beatrice Muguri inspects her 300 avocado trees. Previously, she grew coffee on her 8-acre farm, but switched to avocados a few years ago.
My avocados are about 3 years old. These are the first fruits. Potential buyers have come to my farm several times to check the avocados. They will be coming back to pick the harvest. They picked samples of the fruit.
The potential buyers Mugura is talking about are private exporting companies. Kenya's Ministry of Trade says that the Chinese market will take in over 40% of Kenya's avocado crop, putting Kenya in the top rank of avocado exporters. There's one catch, says trade official Peter Munya.
Usually, if you want to export something outside, there is what is called SPS, sanitary and phytosanitary standard that you have to meet. And technical teams come to assess. When they came to assess the situation of avocado, there was found to have some flies that made it very difficult for us to export raw avocado. And a stopgap decision was made to have frozen avocados and be exported.
A prerequisite for exporting the deal is that farmers or traders are required to freeze the fruits to negative 30 degrees Celsius after peeling off the skin. The fruits are supposed to be chilled further to negative 18 degrees while in transit. The Ministry of Trade plans to support the Kenya National Trading Corporation to establish cold storage facilities for the small farmers.
That already in the budget, we have some resources to support KNTC improve its warehouses and then export.
VOA spoke to private exporters and some are planning to make investments in cold storage to meet the Chinese export requirements. However, small-scale farmers worry that the stringent requirements will prevent many potential farmers from directly exporting the produce. Those farmers are relying on cooperative societies to find markets that can buy their produce fresh from the farm. Raya Lumbur for VOA News, Murang'a, Kenya.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. You'll find us on the radio throughout Asia. You can hear us on U Radio of Hatay University, FM 101.25, at Hatay University in Thailand. Many of you, in fact, listen to our program on U Radio today. We thank you very much for tuning in. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Zainab Abdel-Rahman, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.